I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Do you want to do good something good for your health? Well, try being generous. And I'm sure most of you listening are very generous people. Our guest from the University of British Columbia and her colleagues conducted an experiment to find out if spending money on others could lower blood pressure. She writes that we are confronted every day with choices about how to spend our money. We're faced with decisions to behave generously or not. And she says spending money on others can improve happiness, but it can also improve your physical health. So we're going to find out about how it does that and their very interesting experiment this hour of the program. Ashley Williams is a PhD student in social and health psychology and a public scholar at the University of British Columbia. Her passion is rooted in putting science to work to solve real-world problems within organizations, companies, and the government. And she is working right now with the Green Streets Initiative in Boston to design and test organizational practices that encourage sustainability and promote employee well-being. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Ashley, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, our great pleasure. So, what got you thinking about this? It's a rather unusual study, isn't it?
Well, Maybe to some, I think in the context of the research that our lab studies, it's a natural extension of a lot of the work that our lab has done, showing that helping others is good for happiness.
Mm-hmm. And you cite in the articles that I've read some previous studies that show that volunteering is good for your physical health, but there haven't been as many that show that financial contributions are good for your physical health?
Yes, exactly. So there's a great deal of correlational research, so where you follow people over a period of time and see whether or not volunteers are happier and healthier sometime later. And so there is research suggesting that individuals who volunteer approximately 4 hours on average each week have a lower incidence of cardiovascular health-related problems 4 years later. And what we wanted to do is to provide the first causal evidence that helping others might be able to improve physical health.
So what did you do? What kind of study did you set up?
So we set up an experiment, as we so often do here in the lab. And what we did, I'll kind of just talk you and all of your listeners through exactly what the experience was like for the participants that were in our study.
All right.
So we recruited a community sample of older adults, age 65 years of age and older. And all that our potential participants knew before coming into the study was that they would be asked to spend some payments of money in particular ways. So they didn't know they were going to be assigned to spend money on others or to spend money on themselves, nothing like that. They just knew that they would have to be available for a 6-week period of time, that would be calling them every week with some questions, and that they would have to come in 3 times, so for 3 lab visits, over the course of a 6-week study.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did is we had our participants come into the lab for the first lab visit, and we took our initial baseline blood pressure measures. So all of our participants had previous diagnosis of high blood pressure prior to coming into our study. And we took a blood pressure reading, and we actually had an automatic blood pressure machine. That's really important. When people are in new situations, such as when they're having research assistants in the lab take their blood pressure, they can get kind of nervous, and that can actually make people's blood pressure go up. For
right.
People who are familiar, that's known as white coat hypertension. So we wanted to eliminate that in our study. So we actually had an automatic blood pressure machine. So the automatic blood pressure machine takes 6 automatic readings while the research assistant leaves the room. And then after that initial blood pressure measure was taken, we did what essentially researchers do is flip a coin. It's not exactly like that, but that allows us to randomly assign participants to spend money on others or to spend money on themselves. So we did, you know, the scientific equivalent of flipping a coin. And so some participants in our study were given 3 payments of $40 to spend on themselves for 3 weeks over the course of the 6-week study. So we gave participants $40, and we gave it to them in these spending bottles. So these are really neat. They're actually pretty much medication bottles, and they tracked the date and time that participants opened the bottle. So we knew that participants were compliant with our spending instructions. Mm-hmm. So they were asked to spend on one day a week for three consecutive weeks, and some people were randomly assigned to spend $40 a week on themselves, and some participants were randomly assigned to spend three payments of $40 on others. Participants then came back two other times, so after they had spent two steady payments, or $80, and after they had spent their final $40 payment for a total of $120, and we took their blood pressure readings again. And what we found is that for participants who were randomly assigned by that coin flip at the beginning of the study to spend money on others showed significant reductions in both systolic and diastolic blood pressure over the course of the study as compared to individuals who were assigned to spend these payments on themselves. Now, for individuals who were assigned to spend these payments on themselves, there was no detriment to doing so. So there, it wasn't like their blood pressure was going up. They just received no additional benefit. But for participants who were randomly assigned to spend money on others, they showed significant improvements in blood pressure over the course of the study. And what was surprising to us is that these benefits were similar as to starting a new exercise program. So it seemed that they were clinically relevant, clinically significant differences in blood pressure.
Interesting. So where did they spend their money, those who were giving money to others? And what did it make a difference in terms of where you gave, how good your blood pressure was?
Yeah, so great questions. We let participants in our study because we know that choice is important. So we wouldn't want to tell people exactly how they were supposed to spend their payments. Mm-hmm. We let our participants spend on anything they wanted. And participants were very creative. Participants were spending on charities that had helped members of their family. Participants were spending on neighbors and close friends. Participants were taking out their family members for dinner and buying things for their grandchildren. So there was a wide variety of actual material purchases that participants were spending on others. And we did find some evidence, Kathleen, that target mattered. So it seemed in some cases, people were getting a little bit more benefit depending for their blood pressure, depending on where they spent. Now, it's worth noting that our study was really just designed to assess whether spending money on others could lead to clinically relevant health benefits. So some of the data I'm talking about is fairly tentative, and future studies would need to do more work to really uncover the specific mechanisms of these findings. Mm-hmm. But we did see some hints in our data that people who spent on individuals that they felt closest to seemed to benefit most in terms of blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So people who consistently over the course of the study spent on people that they said they felt close to, such as grandkids, their children, or their close friends, seemed to reap the greatest rewards. And we actually found some interesting patterns in our data. So there were two studies. One was just a survey-based study in a large representative sample in the United States where we looked at just the association or the association between helping others and cardiovascular health for older adults with high blood pressure. And we found some evidence there and some evidence in our experimental study that giving to targets that one was not related to seemed to be the best for health. And this is consistent. So we kind of have a joke in the lab and that, you know, this is a little bit of the in-law effect that maybe you don't want to spend all of your money helping your in-laws. But it's, of course, we're just kidding. But what we find, and this is consistent with work from the volunteering literature, is that you want to give in a way that doesn't feel like an obligation. So you're giving, we know from previous studies, and we see evidence of this in our own work, is that when you give because you feel like you should or you have to, that can actually undermine the benefits. So that's our little joke about the in-law effect, is in one of our studies, we saw some positive associations between spending money on others and blood pressure when most of the money was going to people that were related to you. And that's not to say you shouldn't help out your friends and family, and it does seem a little counterintuitive in terms of the close findings, but I think what that's really getting at in the context of our studies is that you want to give because you feel like you want to, because it's a decision that you have to make, and you want to give to a cause that you feel is really important or something that you really care about in order to reap the rewards, as opposed to giving because you feel guilty or giving because you think that you should.
Right. And you chose blood pressure because that's a significant health meter, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. So we chose blood pressure for a couple of different reasons. Of course, there was a lot of different things we could have looked at in the context of this study, but it's something that we can easily measure in the lab, that, and it's clinically relevant. So we know that blood pressure is a major leading risk factor of having heart attacks later on. And so we really wanted to study, we wanted to know whether or not helping others could lead to clinically relevant benefits for health. Our lab has some other work showing that people who decide to give more in the context of a lab experiment, as opposed to keep a study payment for themselves, also show lower stress hormones. So cortisol is a hormone related to stress. So we saw some evidence of that in a previous paper, but it's a little hard to know. And, you know, science is still uncovering exactly when having high levels or low levels of this stress hormone matter for health. So we really wanted to target and focus on the outcome of our study, specifically on something that we thought would be, that we knew had clear, direct, relevant benefits for physical health.
And one of the things you wrote about your study, you say that to sustain the health benefits of financial generosity, it might be necessary to be engaged in novel acts of financial generosity while prioritizing people you are closest to. What do you mean by novel acts of financial generosity?
So we know from happiness research that people get used to doing things. So if you start a new exercise program and you just keep it exactly the same, the benefits are going to kind of dissipate over time. So, if, you know, you might get a lot of happiness benefits from that new exercise program that you start right when you start it. But over time, you get used to it. And as soon as you start to get used to something, the benefits start to sort of diminish. Just like if you allowed yourself unlimited chocolate every day, then, you know, the chocolate would taste less delicious after a few weeks of just eating chocolate every day. So there's something to keeping things different and new that seems to promote the happiness benefits. So similarly here, you could imagine, and this has come up in some conversations that I've had with colleagues about these findings, you could imagine the same thing might happen in the context of these findings. If you have an auto-enrollment program through your work where your charitable donations are automatically getting deducted from your paycheck, and you're not really thinking about, you know, the act of donating is sort of passive, and you're not really thinking about how your dollars are making a difference. You might not be taking out a friend for lunch, so you might not get the social rewards of giving.
Right.
You might actually see these benefits sort of wear away over time. So what we mean by novel acts, or keeping the act of financial generosity novel, is we mean that in order to sustain the benefits, you want to think of new and different ways in which you can help those around you. So if you're usually donating to one charity, maybe you could donate in a different way. So if you're usually, you know, providing donations to a food bank sort of online, maybe you could go and make a decision to make that donation in person and to really see the impact of your dollars in order to mix it up, in order to sustain the benefits over time. It is interesting to note that we did see over the course, so we measured blood pressure two times after participants had spent payments of money either on themselves or on others. So we measured it at week 4 and at week 6. And we saw significant reductions in blood pressure that stayed consistent over the course of our study. So we weren't seeing any patterns of habituation during the course of our study. But our study was only really 3 weeks long in terms of the actual spending that participants were doing. So longer-term follow-ups would have been needed to really pinpoint this habituation point, but it's worth thinking that in order to sustain these benefits over time, you might need to keep mixing it up in terms of your charitable donations.
Mm-hmm. What did your participants think about this study? Did they think it was fun? Did they have a good time with it? Were they surprised by it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think across both conditions, so we always joke about this in the lab, but people liked getting bottles of money.
Yeah, I bet they did. Right.
People liked coming into the lab and having us give them the choice of spending in these certain ways. Because our categories were broad, participants really enjoyed getting payments of money in small bottles and talking to students. I think that the participants in our study greatly enjoyed trying to come up with clever ways in which to spend the payment. And I think that speaks to, you know, where the benefits of being generous might emerge is the participants in our study were very creative in terms of what they did. There was one woman in the study, which she was very sweet, and she had a friend who was sick, and she was buying him herbal teas with her study payment, and he had a small apartment. So his mailbox was very small, and the $40, wherever she was buying this herbal tea, went a really long way. So she showed us this photo that she had taken. She had 12 different herbal tea packages, and they exactly fit the measurements of his box. And she sent one every single day, and she took a picture of the 12 herbal tea packages. And so he got those benefits of that herbal tea that she had bought while he was sick for a long time, and she certainly enjoyed putting it all together and creating such a special experience for him. So the participants in our study definitely enjoyed coming up with clever and novel ways in which to spend the study payment.
Yeah, very nice. There's one caveat to this, that you can't spend the money at the sacrifice of your own health, right?
Yes. So although we weren't able to directly test this idea, there is a lot of research pointing to the conclusion, and we want to be very careful about these findings too. So there's a couple of things here, but you definitely shouldn't spend it above and beyond your means. So after hearing about these findings on the radio, you should definitely not think about mortgaging your house in order to start a charity. That's definitely not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the discretionary income that we may or may not have, and how we should spend that to maximize happiness and health. And that often comes up when we're talking about our research. We're definitely not advocating for people to go into personal debt in order to help others, but rather to think about how they might be able to spend that additional money that they have that they might otherwise be spending on extra cable channels,
right,
or or that Starbucks latte three times a week, to think about how they could be spending that money in ways that might maximize or promote happiness and health. And so, you know, you could imagine there's a lot of studies showing that, you know, for example, people who help family members are taking care of someone who is sick, and they're helping others and they're helping someone who's close to them that they really care about, that actually can negatively impact stress or negatively impact health, rather, through stress. It can be a stressful experience. And similarly, even there's lab experiments showing that if you imagine helping someone when you're already stressed in the context of a lab experiment, that can lead to increased blood pressure. So it's really a matter of how we can think about spending the income that we have at our own discretion in order to, you know, in ways that might promote happiness and health. And similarly, I think a really important thing with these findings is that we found these effects above and beyond. So people in our study already had high blood pressure. They were already doing things in order to sort of keep their blood pressure in check, and we saw these effects above and beyond what things that people are already doing to manage their hypertension, such as blood pressure medication and exercise and diet. And we are definitely not recommending charitable giving as a replacement for any of those treatments. And so it's really important for listeners to recognize that, you know, it's very important for people, and the people in our study were doing business as usual. They were just also adding charitable giving to what they were already doing. Not, you know, this was not a replacement for any treatment that participants were already undergoing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's welcome phone calls and find out what our audience thinks about their own health and whether or not, I don't know if they've had their blood pressure taken after giving, but what would you do if you were in this experiment? They gave 128 older adults, 65 to 85, $40 a week for 3 weeks. Half were randomly assigned to spend money on themselves, and half were told to spend on others. And then they measured participants' blood pressure before, during, and after their payments, and found that there was a significant blood pressure health outcome, and that's an important measure of health because chronically elevated blood pressure is responsible for a number of deaths every year. So what do you think about this? When you are given a little windfall of cash, if you got a bonus or, I don't know, you somehow found yourself with an extra $40 a week, have you done your own experiments to see if you spend it on yourself? Do you feel better physically, do you think, or do you feel that if you spend the money on others in some way, and if so, how have you spent the money on others? What have you done? There are more studies needed on all of this, but there have been studies showing that volunteering certainly has positive health benefits. So now we're looking at financial donations as well. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Ashley Williams is our guest, and Ashley is a PhD student in social and health psychology and a public scholar at the University of British Columbia, and will be with you momentarily here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcoming phone calls now for Ashley. 800-486-8655 is our number. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. When you give, do you find, obviously you're not having your blood pressure. Maybe you have done this for some strange reason. You've done your blood pressure before you gave and during the time and after. But do you feel better when you give financially, and does it make a difference how you give? If it's somebody close to you, do you feel better about that rather than financial donation and you don't see a human-to-human contact? Or do you feel fine no matter what you do? We're looking at this interesting study that she did along with her colleagues at the University of British Columbia. She's a PhD student in social and health psychology. Dave is our first caller in Milwaukee. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I have a friend and her daughter. Their birthdays were, I thought, together, turns out they weren't, but I wanted to get them birthday present. I thought that would be, I thought I'd get one for rock climbing, a certificate, or maybe tubing. But I wanted something that wasn't just a one-shot deal. So I was kind of racking my brain, and finally came up, oh, a membership to our zoo here in Milwaukee, which includes parking for a year.
Nice.
And it wasn't that expensive, so they can go to the zoo for 2 hours or spend the whole day there, and it doesn't cost them any more money than, you know, so they could just go for a couple hours if they want to. So yeah, it was quite a surprise, and I've always gotten much more pleasure out of giving than receiving. I don't know, just the way I am. In fact, I'm almost embarrassed to get gifts, but.
Well, don't be embarrassed. It's hard sometimes to get gifts, I know, but don't be embarrassed about it, because otherwise you would deny people the very luxury of what you're experiencing was feeling good because you gave something. So somebody
exactly.
Has,
yeah. Yeah, I know. And it's a wonderful thing. It really fills your heart, you know. A couple of mission trips I went on and did the same thing after Hurricane Katrina and stuff. It's,
oh.
You know, I got more out of it, you know. The people gave back more than I gave, I felt. You know, we're so grateful, and so it was just a wonderful experience.
Ashley.
Yeah, that's great. I would say you should also ask them to take pictures of themselves at the zoo or share with you some memories in order for you to even further know how much impact you've been making with that great gift. I think that's a wonderful idea.
It's interesting, and a lot of people feel this way about receiving gifts. I wonder if that was in any aspect of your study, that people feel uncomfortable getting gifts, but they love to give them. Some people do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we haven't looked at that in particular, but I do think that, you know, if you have people in your life like that, I think one way is that's tied to what we're talking about today is to give a gift on their behalf. So, you know, a great Christmas gift, and this is something that I, of course, advocate. I think I would be a hypocrite otherwise, but I always advocate for people to, you know, donate on my behalf or to let me to do something nice for someone and tell me about it, as opposed to receiving material gifts. And actually, you know, it's funny, but there's research kind of showing that, or you can give someone something useful. So there's research showing that we sort of undervalue giving gifts that are useful as opposed to sort of unique gifts or, you know, something that is sort of more seasonal. But people actually really appreciate gifts that they might use every day, like a blender or a new pair of sneakers. And so that can be one way of sort of giving someone something that's a material purchase as opposed to maybe an experience or, you know, a donation on their behalf. But actually giving someone something useful, even though, you know, when we're buying something, we think, oh, well, you know, maybe that's not really what someone would want or they won't like it very much. It turns out that we actually underestimate the extent to which other people will like gifts that actually have useful value, like, yes, like a pair of sneakers
sure.
or a blender.
Oh, there's nothing like a new pair of sneakers, Ashley. Thank you, Dave, very much for your call. Colin in Caledonia, hi.
Hi. Well, one way I think I could, if I had extra money, do something that would be charitable, but at the same time, like, stress relieving. If I had an extra, you know, $40 a week or so, I think I'd be able to, you know, purchase a bag of grass, share it with my friends, and relieve stress at the same time.
All right. Thanks, Colin, for your call. Richard in Rhinelander. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to point out real quick the benefits that you can gain from such a thing during the Christmas season. I've been doing that myself for a number of years now, where instead of just buying something, someone, I try to get a little more creative with the money that I'm going to spend anyway, and do something a little more unique, a little more personal. It's a great opportunity to do it for a variety of people in your life right away.
So what do you do?
Time.
What do you do, Richard?
Pardon me?
What do you do?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, for instance, I took an old lighthouse this year and rebuilt it into a four solar cell panel for my friend.
Oh, my goodness.
She had originally given me the little cheap lighthouse. It was like a candle holder.
Oh.
So the investment was a bit of time and a bit of money, but she really appreciated it. So the opportunity during Christmas to reduce that rampant commercialism that is Christmas has become, it's a great way to do it. It's a good opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
That was all.
Thank you. Ashley?
Great. Yeah, I would advocate also just to kind of add to that point. So I think that was a wonderful example of a unique gift. And another, I just to kind of tag on along the idea of Christmas or birthdays, also we know that experiences can lead to longer lasting happiness than material purchases. So there's research showing that because we anticipate an experience like an upcoming vacation or a tour or going to the zoo, as one of the listeners already mentioned earlier, and we really anticipate those special events, we get a lot of benefit even before the event has happened. And then when we have that experience, we get to think about it and talk about it with our friends and family after. So the happiness benefits of experiential purchases go on a little bit longer than material purchases because we get anticipatory joy, and we also get to talk about the experience with our friends and family. So I'd also advocate for buying an experience like a concert ticket for a close friend or for a partner as another potential way of spending money on others. And then if you go along as well, you'll also get the social benefits. Mm-hmm. You'll not only be able to purchase a great gift for someone that you care about, but you'll also get to spend quality time with someone that you really appreciate.
Mm. Thank you, Richard, for the call. So here's the little, quiz experiment we would like for you to participate in this hour. If you were given $40 a week for the next 3 weeks and you were told two things, because I'm wondering what you were doing if you were in one group or the other. If you were told you had to spend the $40 on somebody other than yourself, it could be charity, it could be somebody close to you, but it had to be not money spent on you, what would you do with it? And if you were given $40 a week for the next 3 weeks to spend on yourself, what would you do with it? And some of you, I'm sure, have had a little extra money that you've done that very same thing with, given it to yourself or given it to somebody else. And what's your experience as a result of having done that? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. It was kind of the basis of the experiment that we are talking about this hour with Ashley Williams, who's a PhD student in social and health psychology at the University of British Columbia. And she and her colleagues gave older adults, 65 to 80, $40 a week for 3 weeks, what I just told you about. But they also took their blood pressure, and this is an indication of well-being, and found that those who gave were not only feeling probably psychologically better about themselves, but that physically their blood pressure went down. They had a significant reduction in their blood pressure if they gave rather than kept the money for themselves, which is interesting. Our phone number, and we'd love to hear what you would do, 800-486-8655. Before we go back to phone calls, Ashley, so you get the results of this study, and then you immediately think, well, now what we have to do is what?
So in this study, I think one thing that is important to know is exactly when and for who these benefits emerge. So we see some evidence that close friends, maybe if you spend money on others that are closest to you, that leads to the most significant benefits. But now what we need to do is run an even larger experiment randomly assigning people to spend money in one way versus the other. So in a friend or an acquaintance, and to have that social component, or to a charity that someone cares about, to really distill the factors that are driving these effects. And also it'd be worth knowing whether or not these benefits could also emerge for giving time. So there's a little bit of experimental research showing that volunteering causally leads to benefits. So these were some colleagues that used to be at the University of British Columbia, where they randomly assigned students to participate in a new volunteering experience, or they were assigned to the wait list and then volunteered later after this study was done, and found significant reductions in cholesterol and significant reductions in body mass index for students who volunteered. However, these were students from a lower income background, and so it's hard to know how these effects generalize to a broader population. So I think research also needs to be done here, Kathleen, looking at whether time is also one way, another way of causing improvements in health and happiness.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Jan in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Jan.
Hi.
Hi.
I was telling the screener that I'm on the computer a lot, and I am Facebook friends with many dog rescues, and there are times when they'll ask for contributions, and I just go to my PayPal, and I'll give some money. And I also drive transport for dogs for an organization called Mobile Mutts.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference I feel between actively helping to drive dogs and the simple act of clicking on PayPal, it's a world of difference. I come back from driving these dogs that are shipped up north from like Georgia and Kentucky from high kill shelters, and we bring them up to Minnesota, and the difference is outstanding. I feel so wonderful. And it's just a simple case of, you know, it's your gas money and your time, but it's a huge difference. I feel great when I do that.
Mm. Ashley.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I like that you're actually, yes, going and making that extra effort. So we know also that, you know, kind of going a little bit above and beyond, so maybe actually, you know, spending a little time as well, as you're saying, and a little bit of gas money can really make a difference in terms of unlocking the benefits of helping others when you feel like you've really made an investment in the decision to be generous. As I said, maybe, you know, in addition to just donating with a one click, actually investing a little bit of time and money can lead to the greatest reward.
There's a difference. It certainly feels great.
Thank you, Jan, for your call. Let's go to Anne in Duluth. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I have a different take on it, perhaps. When I retired a couple of years ago, we were supposed to tell someone what we wanted as a retirement gift. Well, I didn't really need or want anything, and I worked at a low-income school. And what I wanted was to donate it to our family fund at the school. But I could feel a chill in the room when I said that, the Mother Teresa of Duluth, Minnesota. So when I accepted my gift, because I stuck to it, I had to give kind of a funny speech saying, well, what I really wanted was a new dining room table, but that was too much money, so I did this instead, because I know I was making everybody else feel uncomfortable. And the same thing happened with my family at Christmas. I said, you know, I don't really need or want anything. Right. I'd really rather donate to a charity. And I could feel a chill in the room, like, oh, here's the killjoy.
That's interesting, Ashley.
Yeah, I mean, I resonate with a little bit of what you're saying. I feel like, oh, well, here goes Ashley again, wanting you to donate on her behalf. So I feel like one way of mitigating that, and I did just recently get married, and that was a struggle in my family, too. Oh, well, we have to have a registry. Oh, but Mom, I really don't want stuff. No, but like, I really don't want stuff. I study this. I really don't want stuff.
Right.
And so I eventually, you know, I resonate with what you're saying. And so what I'll do is I'll graciously accept the stuff. And then sometimes, I hope none of my family is listening to this. Probably not, because they're in Canada. So, but I will, you know, just donate on my own behalf. I'll, you know, I might return a couple of things, and do this sort of on my own or give secretly without saying anything, just so that I do feel I am conscious also that sometimes when you give and it's sort of you're an exemplar, that it might make people uncomfortable. So I'll give privately or kind of find my own way of giving.
Mm. Well, you could ask somebody to give you new tennis shoes, right, Ashley?
Mm-hmm.
You could.
Yeah.
That would be all right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a nice and practical. Oh, that's interesting for you to be doing this research, and then, of course, everybody wants to give you all these things you probably don't need because you're getting married. That's interesting. Anne, thank you very much for the call.
Yeah,
let's go to Alec and Eau Claire. Hi, Alec.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. So my comment is about the what I would do with $40 for myself for 3 weeks and what I would do for with $40 if I was giving for 3 weeks.
Right.
And honestly, I'd probably end up, like, buying myself clothing because I don't have a lot of that with $40 a week. But if I was made to, and actually, even if I just had $40 a week extra, I would probably end up giving $40 to three different trans people for their surgery funds, because as a person who has struggled with money for surgery funds and still hasn't been able to get surgery because it's not ever insured, it sucks. And I could give them $40, which isn't a heck of a lot considering you need like $10,000, but it would be a help.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Alec.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So this is interesting, too, and I don't know if your study looked at this. If you're giving to people for a cause that's near and dear to you, does that make a difference? And is that where people have chosen to give, Ashley, or have they branched out to other places that may not be as close to them?
Yes. So we do know, so to answer the first part of your question first, we do know, so not directly in the study, but I have another paper with some of my colleagues at the University of British Columbia showing that when you give in a way that you can see the specific impact of your gift, so you know exactly how your dollars were making a difference, that increases the happiness benefits of giving. And so similarly, when people are giving to causes that they care about, that can also increase the benefits that people get from giving. So it seems to kind of boost the emotional benefits that people give from being generous when they both care about the cause and they see the direct impact the cause is having. So to answer your second point, there were some people that gave to causes and bought presents in ways for others that they would have never done otherwise. So an example that comes to my mind is, you know, some of the people on our study, so that this was a cause that they cared about, but maybe not something that they had ever thought of giving before coming into our study. One of the participants in our study was a war veteran, and he donated to a school that was being built on behalf of his friend who he'd served with in the Vietnam War.
Oh.
And although he had expressed interest in donating to this cause before, he really didn't have, he was a veteran and not working, dealing with some medical expenses of his own, and had never really had this additional money that he was able to spend. So although it was a cause that he had cared about, he had never had the opportunity to donate.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, in that case, not only is that person personally connected to the charity, which we know can increase the benefit, but they also seemed to know exactly where their dollars were going, and they felt like they had made a significant difference.
Right.
And all of those things matter for reaping the rewards of financial generosity.
Mm-hmm. Alec, thank you so much for your call. Anne in Madison, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So, yes, this is a case where I knew where my money was going and what it was going to be used for. I had, about a month ago, I had all my bills paid, and I had around $100 left. And I know my sister would like me to have put it in my 401k, but I wanted to do something with it. So I thought about it for a day or so, and then I called the Salvation Army shelter and asked it what the ladies needed, specifically the ladies. And they said, well, the weather is really mild now, but it is going to get cold, and what we really need are hand warmers. So I went to Walmart, and I bought two full boxes of them, and I thought, you know, I thought it was going to be more than $100. I bought some other things too, but to donate, but I thought it was going to be more than $100, but I thought, well, that's okay. And I went through the checkout and it was only like $82. So I bought everything I wanted and more to donate, and it was less money than, to me, that was like a bonus that I spent less than what I even expected. And so now, today, when it's really cold out, I know what those hand warmers are being used for.
Right. You can actually imagine where they are right now. Right. Ashley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great, 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 great way of being financially generous. And I think, and you point out something that's also nice as well, is that, you know, you kind of budgeted to be pro-social. Mm-hmm. You sort of said at the end of your month, I have this much money left and I want to do something with it. And that's exactly what we're trying to get at in the context of these studies and some other studies our lab has run in the past, is that that's really what we're encouraging people to do, is look at your finances and, you know, after your basic needs are met, think, I have this money, what could I do? How could I do the most good with this extra money that I have this month?
Mm-hmm. You know, thank you so much for your contribution and for calling in. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Number is 800-486-8655. And you're listening to the Wisconsin Public Radio, the Ideas Network. Our guest this hour says that every day we're confronted with choices about how to spend our money. And we're looking at a study that they have done at the University of British Columbia, that spending money on others can, we know, improve happiness, but it can also improve your physical health. This is the Ideas Network, and we'll take more phone calls in a moment. Melissa in Eau Claire is next. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
A little, like, way I like to give, when you don't need to have a big thank you or anything like that, is just in line at the coffee shop. You know, you pay for the person that's behind you, the pay it forward thing. I like to do that. You don't have to go through, you know, people saying thank you, and it's completely random, and it makes people's day a little brighter, I think. I've been on the receiving end.
I was just about to ask you that. How have you felt when somebody's done that for you?
It just is like, oh, that was really nice, you know, and it's totally random, so you're not expecting it, and it just kind of makes your day a little better, just, you know, when it starts off, you know.
It sure does.
Mm-hmm.
Like that bumper sticker, random acts of kindness, right? Nothing like that, Ashley. That's a good thing.
Yeah, and there's even research showing that if you do that, then the person behind you is more likely to do that. So not only are you both increasing your happiness, but you're increasing the happiness of the entire coffee shop. So why not?
Thank you so much, Melissa, for your call. Gail in Fish Creek, hi.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I do a lot of work with animals as a professional. I work with them psychically, communicating with them, and doing healing work. And I donate a lot of the fees that I get to animal causes, and I have for decades. And I do a lot of fundraiser coordination for helping animals, and it's a lot for the animals. And I don't know if it's so much that it's a happiness that you feel, but it's more like a sense that something that you are doing is having an effect and moving out beyond your sphere of your immediate life. And I'm wondering, with so many people who are, I think there's a gene, there has to be a gene that we're born with this, and because some people are givers and some people are takers, and some people just can't decide which they want to be. But as with people who are so giving, eventually, they have to learn, I think, as part of a lesson, learn how to receive in order for there to be a balance in their life. You find that?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's great. That's like what we were talking about before, too, about how you want to take care of yourself first. So there's some research in the volunteering literature showing that, you know, volunteers, people who volunteer their time, are also, you know, more apt to take better care of themselves. And that those people are the ones that are having the greatest benefit in terms of well-being. So I think, Gail, that speaks really nicely to what you're saying, in the sense that there are maybe some people that are walking around the world with the proclivity to be more generous than others, kind of as a default, perhaps. but that they that these people might be especially needing to be sensitive to make sure that they take care of themselves first, so that they have the capacity to take care of others as well.
Mm-hmm. Leslie on Facebook says, whenever she bought a gift for someone else, she always feels better if she was more generous. It always felt better giving then if she was more generous. Whenever she bought a gift for someone else, if she was more generous, you know. Gail, thanks very much for your call. Reed, and we have time for another caller. If you'd like to call in now, take that $40 once a week for 3 weeks experiment with us. What would you do if you could spend on yourself, or if you were in the group that had to spend on somebody else? 800-486-8655. Reed in Clintonville. Hi.
Yes, good afternoon. Say, two quick things. Recently, I came across a number of charities, the 25 worst charities, and how much they actually used for in-house operations, and then the percentage, which was astounding. In some cases, less than 1% of whatever was collected went towards whatever the particular aspect of the charity was. And people should be diligent in researching these things, because just because a charity says firemen or policemen or cancer or children needing health care, that does not mean that those charities are all that aggressive in providing the major portion of their funds. Secondly, I've been listening and have not really heard anyone speak to local issues. You know, giving locally is a critically important aspect of keeping your community strong. Giving to a food pantry, and not just food, but people that are in need oftentimes need things like paper products, for instance, let's say, that are not viable with food stamps. And these issues need to be addressed locally as well. And we find that our small community of Clintonville certainly in many cases benefits more from funds donated or material or food or paper products donated than if we would give a few dollars to a cancer research foundation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think these are all great points to keep in mind. There's a couple of things. So I actually do conduct research with organizations that are helping to educate people about where and how to give to have the most impact for their dollar. So kind of speaking to the fact that not all charities are equal, and it is really important for individuals to do their due diligence in terms of making charitable donations so that they're giving to the most effective causes. This can also be really difficult when, you know, there is money that goes into advertising related around charitable giving to make us feel like we're really helping, even if that charity may not have, you know, may not be making as big of a difference as it could be. So there's sites like GiveWell or The Life You Can Save, where if you're really wanting to do some background investigation work around the charitable organizations that you're donating, that these are great websites and great resources to really find out exactly where the donations are going. I think on that note, overhead is not always the best proxy for impact. Sometimes the most effective charities actually do have to have a little bit of overhead cost to pay their staff and to make sure that things are running correctly. But I do really agree with your point that it's important to consider the specific impact that your donations are making above and beyond, you know, just in terms of doing something that make you feel good, because you're spending time with friends and family in addition to helping them or providing them with something. I think those are worthwhile. But I also agree that it's important to think, how is your donation fulfilling a need that exists in the world? So if after listening to this radio program, maybe do a little bit of brainstorming about what needs exist in your local community, as you're suggesting, and think about how you might be able to donate to those specific causes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Very short, I'm sorry, KB, we're almost out of time, but briefly, from Minnesota, hi.
Good morning, or afternoon. Just actually kind of echoing what Reed was just talking about, basically what my wife and I have decided to do is when we donate, we actually donate to, like, individual families or an individual that had gone through a loss in their life, and we'll cut a check for them, we know that that's directly, you know, helping them out in whatever financial straits they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that this last Christmas for an acquaintance that had a daughter who was going through surgery. And, you know, those are the things that my wife and I feel really good about, just doing it locally and not doing so much the corporate contribution.
Right. Yeah, well, it's very good. It's good for you to do that. And thank you, KB, for the call. Well, what an interesting hour and what interesting work you're doing, Ashley. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Ashley Williams, PhD student in social and health psychology and a public scholar at the University of British Columbia. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the hour and to KP Whaley for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up. Central Time will follow, and we'll be with you again tomorrow.